Hello, everyone, and welcome to this special podcast conversation marking International Women's Day 2026 with the title Advancing Rights, Justice, and Action for Women and Girls. Every year on March 8th, the world reflects on progress made toward gender equality while also acknowledging the work that still lies ahead of us. This year's theme, Rights, Justice, Action for All Women and Girls, reminds us that advancing gender equality requires more than commitment. It requires measurable progress and sustained action. Despite growing global attention to gender equality, significant gaps still remain in areas such as economic participation, policy representation, access to justice, and institutional accountability, particularly in emerging and developing economies. Today's conversation, therefore, focuses on how we can move from awareness to action, exploring policies, behavioral insights, and collaborative efforts that can accelerate progress for women and girls in Nigeria and, if possible, the world at large. My name is Ogunekere Noah Olatoye, and I'll be your host for today's discussion. Joining me today are two incredible voices helping to shape this conversation. Welcome with me, Ms. Ogechi Obiora, Head of Corporate Affairs and Stakeholder Management at the Nigerian Economic Summit Group, NESG, and Ms. Esiogene Adams, Gender and Inclusion Advisor at the Policy Innovation Center. Thank you both for joining this conversation.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
To start off, I'd like to begin with a question. My first question will be to Ms. Ogechi. In your interactions with stakeholders across government, the private sector, and civil society, what key challenges facing women in the economy are most frequently raised, and how does the NESG help elevate these issues on national agenda?
Okay, so thank you very much, Kemi, for that question. I think that in our engagements, you know, across all the stakeholders, government, private sector, civil society, I would like to highlight four issues that consistently come up when we discuss women in the economy. And the first is constrained access to finance and markets, particularly for women-led MSMEs. And the second is the regulatory and the structural barriers, which includes informality and some compliance burdens. And these are like deeper systemic constraints in the economy that disproportionately affect women. The third one I would like to highlight is the issue of the girls' child access to health and education, which contributes to high rates of out-of-school children in Nigeria. And fourth is the underrepresentation in economic decision-making spaces. So these four issues consistently stand out. And in some of our research, you know, at the NESG, we have pointed, especially with reference to our H2 2025 report, which was Making Nigeria Reforms Work for Inclusive Growth. In that in that research, we actually highlighted that we've seen growth. The GDP growth improved to 3.4%. Reserves strengthened. We saw fiscal reforms, you know, generating savings, and the data shows that poverty had increased from about 56% in 2023 to 59% in 2024. But so, on one hand, the reforms are working at the macro level, but the inclusion gap remains, and this was highlighted in that research, particularly for women in informal employment, who feel this directly through rising food and transport costs, reduced purchasing power, and tighter credit conditions. So in that journal, in that research, the NESG made a very strong case for what it calls embedded inclusivity, meaning that reforms must intentionally, you know, integrate equity. And this is our message across, you know, different research and partnership and collaborations and the reform agenda that we drive at the NESG. Now, what's the NESG doing to scale this in the national conversation, in national agenda setting? The policy platforms at the NESG, in their policy advocacy efforts, typically seek to translate, you know, these lived challenges into reform asks. So Through the policy commissions of the NESG, we convene both the public and the private sector to drive consensus on actionable policy recommendation, you know, specifically on what needs to change, who should change it, and what success should look like, you know, and how we measure success. So our value is moving more from complaints, you know, that we've seen what the data shows, and we hear from our stakeholders about the challenges that they face, but we're moving from complaints to reform pathways with clear and measurable implementation roadmaps. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Moving from complaints to clear implementation. And it really highlights how important it is for institutions like NESG to create platforms where these issues can be brought into policy conversations. You highlighted the informal sector, you highlighted the need for this to just not stay at conversations, but to go towards the implementation perspectives or platforms. Thank you very much. My next question will be to Ms. Oseogene. Based on PIC's behavioral insights work, what are key social and behavioral barriers that continue to hinder women's rights and gender equality in Nigeria?
Okay. All right. Thank you so much, Ms. Ogenekere. So looking at some of the work we have done, you know, come across different types of social and behavioral barriers, and we can look at them, you know, from different perspectives. So we have those that something we call normative barriers, right? And then we also have those that are non-normative. So when you talk about normative, you're talking about things that already exist. You're talking about norms, you know, how they affect women's rights, you know, also affect gender equality. So particularly, I'll be focusing on the particular program we are doing and, you know, around domesticating a particular policy in Lagos State. It's called the WEEP policy. I'm sure you've heard about it, the Women Economic Empowerment Policy. So this policy was particularly, you know, constituted to fight some of these barriers and some of the barriers women face in achieving equality, you know, trying to close that gender gap that exists already, that even keeps widening. Some of the barriers, looking at it from the normative aspect, is patriarchy. So sometimes there's this notion around women that women are not supposed to, you know, rise high. They are not supposed to have access to land, you know. So it becomes difficult for women to be empowered. And once a woman is not empowered, girls are not empowered, it keeps widening that gap. And then becomes very difficult to achieve, you know, gender equality or equity, as we will call it. Now, looking at those barriers, the WEEP policy was constituted so that some of those barriers can be taken off, so that women can have access to finance, women can have access to land, women can have access to skills, you know, that will make them to become more empowered. Now, aside that barrier, there's still the barrier around unpaid care work. You know, most times it's already instituted like it's normal. Women are meant to take most of the responsibilities at home. So when women spend more time in caring for the home, it becomes difficult, you know, to find time to invest in other, you know, other things that will enable them gain agency, that will enable them become empowered. So unpaid care work is another barrier, you know, that keeps hindering women. Why should a woman be the one to be burdened with all the responsibilities at home? Or, you know, something around that. So that's another barrier. Then another barrier is now moving from normative, you know, at the beginning I talked about normative and non-normative. So moving to non-normative. So these are barriers that can come up, you know, in terms of structure, access, right? Structural barriers. You know, sometimes even when women want to become empowered, women are making effort, sometimes more of these things are not available. So for instance, in that the domestication of that WIP policy, some of the barriers that were identified, even though women now have access maybe to finance, sometimes when they want to access this finance, some of the requirements are so much. So for example, a woman wants to start a business maybe with 50,000 or 100,000, and then you're asking, she wants a loan, right? And then you're asking for collateral. Where is she going to get it from? So that's another level of barrier. So a lot of these things are really hindering women from gaining that agency to become empowered. And that's why that WIP policy has been put in place, so that it can close up some of these barriers, and then women can become, you know, more equipped, have access to land, have access to finance, have access to skills, have access to education, and, you know, and take it up from there. Thank you.
Thank you so much for that elaborate explanation. You learn every day, and you raise very important points, especially for the unpaid care. And gender equality challenges are often influenced not only by policy gaps, but deeply rooted in the social norms and behaviors, as you have highlighted, the normative and non-normative. So thank you very much for bringing that up. My next question would be to Ms. Ogechi. NESG's vision emphasizes building an inclusive and globally competitive economy. How does your office, the position you hold, communicate the importance of women's participation within that vision to partners and key stakeholders within the vision that NESG tries to build an inclusive and globally competitive economy?
Okay, thank you very much, Kewe. So NESG's vision emphasizes building an inclusive and globally competitive economy. Now, the vision to build an inclusive, you know, the word inclusivity and a globally competitive economy, we know, and data tells us that vision cannot be realized without women's full participation, especially when you take into consideration the fact that women make up a very huge percentage of the economy and even the working economy. So women's inclusion, you know, in nation building is an economic strategy on its own that is very, very key to the realization of this inclusive and globally competitive economy. And we are very, very conscious of that at the NESG. In some research that we have conducted, for instance, the H2 journal that I spoke about earlier in 2025, we noted that the Nigeria's tax to GDP ratio remains between 7% and 8%, right? And we noted the importance of diversification. It's no longer optional. It's very, very essential. And it requires, you know, this diversification is what is going to help to expand the product base. Now, our job and productivity analysis, which we published in the job and productivity report, which we published in 2025 as well, emphasized that labor-intensive sectors like agro-processing, light manufacturing, and industrial clusters are the engines of job creation and competitiveness. And women are very central to these sectors. So also is the informal sector, which we have a lot of women playing in the informal sector. So when you take all this data together, you see that if we want to achieve an inclusive and a globally competitive economy, then we must intentionally, you know, we must intentionally make sure that women are participating. Now, how do we communicate women's participation? Three ways specifically. One, as a productivity issue, you know, because like I said earlier, labor intensive growth depends on female participation, especially with the high number of women in Nigeria and in the working class. Second is as a revenue issue, because women-led SMEs, you know, when we strengthen the women-led MSMEs, we strengthen the task base. And then three, as a competitiveness issue, because inclusive economies are more resilient and investor-ready. And this, you know, is something that data has shown across the world. So if we want to have an inclusive and a globally competitive economy, it means that we have to look at the productivity issue and make sure that in those labor intensive, you know, growth sectors, that female participation is not only aided, but activated and aided to scale. At the revenue level, we know that when we strengthen the women-led MSMEs and they strengthen, you know, they're able to employ more people, you know, we not only just speak to the job and productivity issue, we also speak to the revenue issue because more women are able to pay tax and contribute to the economy. On the competitiveness level as well, right? When we are able to strengthen the MSMEs, the women-led SMEs with, you know, like I said earlier, access to finance and remove some of those structural and regulatory barriers that my colleague also mentioned by embedding the WE principles as well, this actually leads to competitiveness because women are empowered and they give back to the society and they drive economic growth and competitiveness. So we need to pay attention to how women participate, you know, through decent work that takes into consideration some of the issues that were highlighted earlier, you know, family issues, access issues, and make sure that women have access to decent work, right? And make sure that in terms of leadership as well, that women are supported and mentored, and that there are actually targeted policies that help women to attain leadership roles without any of the social cultural barriers to it, both in the workplace and in the society and even in government. So again, we need to make sure that we're improving household welfare for women. You know, my colleague Essie spoke to it earlier as well, because women, as we know, you know, have this always dual roles of being the providers and, you know, in very basic sense in their families, and as well workers and contributing to the economy as well. So when we are able to do this for the women, especially the women-led MSMEs, the firms become more resilient and they're able to drive economic growth within their sectors. Now that the NESG, through the NESG Policy Commission, especially the platforms that are focused, you know, on the MSMEs, the human capital platforms like health and education and trade and investment and competitiveness and policy commissions, the NESG continues to advocate for improving access to finance, like I mentioned earlier, which is something that is recurring, you know, through all our engagements and our research. Investing in skills and transition into the growth sectors, you know, these are sectors that we know that if we're able to invest in those sectors, that they will trigger, they will trigger economic growth in Nigeria. So these sectors are critical that we enable and aid the women playing in these sectors so that they're able to, they are able to scale and help the economy to grow in those sectors. So the women must not be left behind in the growth sectors. And also we try to advocate for implementation of initiatives to reduce the rate of school dropouts, you know, so the out of school children, particularly the female children as well, because they say educate a woman, educate the nation. You will find out from research and data that women who are educated go over and beyond to make sure that their children also are educated as well. And that way, we begin to turn around the data on out-of-school children by making sure that the girls are in school. And when the girls are in school, this kind of limits the, you know, the early marriage and all the health implications and the poverty, you know, that follows it. So it's important that we focus and address the issue of out-of-school children, which the NESG does through the Education Policy Commission. So these are some of the ways that the NESG continues to leverage its platform to ensure that the research and the data, as well as our conversations with the stakeholders, that we continue to elevate and that we continue to emphasize on the key things that we need to do, and especially the role of women in this inclusive and globally competitive economy that we want to build. Thank you.
Thank you so much for that very expansive response. You highlighted a lot of things, and you have just reinforced the idea that gender inclusion is not just a social priority, but also an economic one. And also, you made a point that educate a woman, educate a nation. Even women who are not educated strive to ensure that their children get that education they were not able to get. So thank you very much for putting up those inclusive and globally competitive points that the NESG facilitates through its platforms. My next question is to Ms. Essay. PIC leads several gender and inclusion initiatives. What recent findings from your gender equality and social inclusion programs do you believe Nigeria should be paying closer attention to?
Okay, all right, thank you for that question, and also thank you to Ogechi. So basically, some of the things that we are beginning to find out from some of the work we've been doing across different sectors is something that we should be paying attention to is inclusion when designing policies. So how do you design policies that are inclusive? So one of the ways you can actually do that is by involving every stakeholder. So when I say stakeholder, we are not just looking at the top level people. So stakeholder cuts across anyone that we get to interact with that policy. So starting from the top, you know, to the end user as well. So it's important that you get the buy-in of everyone. And one of the ways we do that, so I will still refer to the domestication of the WE policy. So one of the ways we actually did that was to have a kind of co-creation, you know, around those policies. And then we also conducted interviews, you know, IDIs, KIIs with people who, just like I mentioned already, stakeholders. So I'll use the word stakeholders. So when you get the buy-in of everyone, so designing the policies become, you know, not like when after designing, someone will now come to say, oh, we're not there or we are not aware. But by the time everybody comes together to develop those kind of policies, you get everyone's buy-in, get everyone's perspective, everyone's view. So it's, you know, makes it easier when it comes to implementation. And because you've included everybody, nobody's left out. You know, that's actually the goal around inclusion. You know, design, when you talk about gender responsive policies, it means you've gotten the buy-in of everyone. You've looked at people's different opinion. How is this policy going to affect the people at the top? How is it going to affect the people, you know, at the middle? And how is it going to affect the end user? Because sometimes you develop policies and you find out that at the point of implementation, especially the end users, the people at the grassroots levels, you cut them off because they are not even aligned properly. So designing inclusive policies is one of the things we've identified, you know, that can bring about equality, equity, and, you know, and the rest. And another thing that is very important that we should be paying attention to is evidence, right? So you don't just develop policies, you just sit down in your office and come up with a policy. It's important that you have evidence to back that policy up. And one of the ways you can do that, go to the field. You know, if you want to design policies for women, example, don't just sit sit in your office and design those policies. Reach out to those women, have conversations with them. If you are designing policies for market women, you are designing policies for the petty trader, bring them into the room, interview them. What are those pain points? They will be the ones to identify what their pain point is. You, who is not a trader, you are not a market woman, you might not exactly know what they need at that point in time. So it's important. So evidence, every policy must be driven by evidence. That's the only way, you know, is going to work effectively for the people you are designing those policies for. Then another thing that Nigeria should be paying attention to, so there's this program we are currently doing, is around strengthening women's leadership in economics, academics, but economics. So one of the things that we've identified as a serious issue, where a lot of students get, matriculated as economics students, and then most times after graduation, they just fade out. So I was also mentioning another aspect that we should focus on, you know, based on some of the findings we've gotten from our ongoing work around strengthening women's leadership in academics, as with a special focus on economics. So we identified the issue of mentorship. So I think it's high time begin to pay attention to mentorship. You know, people need to, you know, have that hand-holding, right? They need people that they can look up to, people who can walk them through the path they are trying to go through. You know, some people have gone through it already. So we need that kind of system in place, you know, that level by level growth among women. And by doing that, we believe that a lot of women would also be able to move up the ladder. So mentorship, we also need to begin to, you know, focus more on mentorship. So I think I'll just stop there. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much for your response. Insights like this are very valuable because they help shape policies and programs that respond to real challenges. My next question would be to Ms. Ogechi. And as the custodian of NESJ stakeholder relationships, what actionable steps do you believe Nigerian institutions, businesses, and communities can take in partnership with organizations like NESJ to unlock full economic potential of women and girls?
Okay, so I think that this continues to be an ongoing conversation. But I just want to reiterate that to unlock the economic potential of women and girls, we need coordinated action across all the stakeholders, the government institutions, the private sector, the civil society organizations, even the academia, right? So research must lead to evidence, must lead to provide data for implementation. There has to be that connection. And there has to be that coordination. I think that a lot of work is going on in silo, you know, across these different stakeholders. Government is pushing some reforms, and like my colleague Esse mentioned earlier, some of this without the stakeholders in the room, you know, without the people who are involved in the room to hear their own stories. We're designing reforms. You know, the private sector is having its own coordinated intervention in some cases, and in some cases, just organizations are doing their thing, you know, based on their understanding of what the issues are. And the civil society as well is also, you know, running their own show with the development partners and everyone in the game, just trying to solve the same problem, but, you know, attacking it and coming at it from different angles. I think that what's important is the coordination that is required, you know, across this diverse stakeholders. And I think it's something that we need to talk about and begin to focus about and focus on. But you know, we at both at the different stakeholder levels, there are some specific things that should or can be done, you know. For instance, the job and productivity report that I mentioned earlier, I think the emphasis, we were saying that growth has to be driven by sector productivity and not just access to credit, right? And that report highlighted some of the key sectors, the key growth sectors, which includes, you know, agro processing and manufacturing, you know, with strong backward linkages, as well as industrial clusters, you know, as priority areas that that will drive growth. So imagine if all the stakeholders decided to take a stab at this identified areas that could help boost growth and productivity. Now, what we've also noted is that these sectors are very labor intensive, but they are scalable and they are capable of absorbing a lot of women and youth into that productive, into productive employment in those sectors. So if this is a consensus and the stakeholders now decide to take a stab at this from the different dimensions, that helps, right? As opposed to, like I said earlier, people just trying to do different things and coming at it from different areas. If we all agree that we need inclusivity and we need growth, and we have identified the sectors that we think will drive growth in the short term and in the medium term, then it means that the attention of every stakeholder is needed, you know, to aim at scaling those sectors, especially because these sectors have a lot of women in them and they are also very capable of absorbing even more women and youth and helping to drive this whole growth objective that, you know, economic growth objective that it's very critical at the moment. So what should stakeholders be doing? Like Essie said earlier, designing inclusive policies is very important, both at the government level, at the private sector level, and at, you know, both the community and civil society. So government should aim to strengthen social protection, you know, through targeted policies that make sure that women have access to health, to education, you know, and to all the social protection that they need. Now, there is also the pact about the, you know, using a gender lens. So there has to be an integration of gender impact assessments into reforms and, you know, and all the policies. So the policies, the reforms has to have a gender lens that enables them to make sure that gender impact assessment is integrated into reforms. So the gender impact assessment into reforms is very, very important. And also government needs to improve infrastructure, right? Especially the because we've seen that infrastructure impacts women-led MSMEs, you know, and at a very huge scale. So power, transport, and all the, you know, the necessary infrastructure that will aim to make this MSMEs, especially the women-led ones, to scale. There has to be policies in place and government reforms that helps to improve access to this infrastructure. From the business perspective, I would say the businesses also have to bring in the gender lens into their businesses, you know, have policies that foster gender equity, you know, and that enables them to look at how women are being, you know, the negative impacts or some of the difficulties that women in the workplace are experiencing, and will help them to have targeted policies that, you know, that targeted policies that actually examine, you know, the problems and the issues that the women, by speaking to the women themselves, you know. So there has to be equitable hiring, you know, taking into consideration some of the data that and the evidence that speaks to the gaps, you know, between a woman who is working and has to take a maternity leave and sometimes has to care for children and all, and some of the nuances that we see in the hiring process. So there has to be equitable hiring that make sure that women and the, you know, they are considered in the hiring process and given opportunity within the hiring process. There has to be, the businesses has to put in mentoring and promotion systems that, you know, identifies or with a gender lens that actually helps to identify, you know, the issues or some of the constraints to women, and then make targeted efforts at the policies on mentoring and promotion to help women bridge those problems and those gaps that they may be experiencing within the workplace. I think I've mentioned it before, but it's important to also invest in women-led supply chains, the women-led MSMEs, like I've said, including the compliance processes, right? And even the access to credit and, you know, some of the access to infrastructure. My colleague also talked about the issue of land, right? And access to land, access to other different infrastructure. This is important as well for businesses, especially maybe those in agro and the agriculture business chain. So I have also mentioned the structured mentorship pathway, and I think that Esther spoke to it earlier. This has been identified as something that is very, very critical to women in the workplace. You know, that mentorship, the structured mentorship and the training pathway that enables them to, you know, build their skills and grow. Then clear leadership pathways, you know, that takes into consideration the, you know, the society and some of the issues and the challenges for women in the workplace, but ensures that the women is mentored and that the leadership pathway remains clear and open for women in businesses. And then for communities and the civil society as well, you know, it's important that we begin the reorientation about girls' education again, and that so much so that it becomes a norm that no one questions, that every girl has to go to school. Like I mentioned earlier, this helps us to make sure that there are no out-of-school girls. And this also kind of ensures that the girls are not married off, you know, with all the attendant health and poverty cycle that enables. Then skill development, you know, across this high sector growth that we have identified. It's important that the civil societies and the communities put in place, you know, measures to make sure that the girls and the women have access to skills that help them develop within those sectors, you know, and any other sector that they may be playing in. And then to unlock women's economic potential, like I said earlier, requires this coordination across the sectors. So if government is making policies that enable the businesses to put in their own policies, supporting the reforms at the government level, and then allow the communities, you know, and the civil societies as well to support with other interventions, you know, all built towards the same direction, then we would have skill. So that coordination is very, very key. And this is one thing that the NESG does through its policy commission, through its advocacy, and through all the other, you know, through the summit, which is our flagship event. We bring this convening, right, where we bring all the stakeholders at the convening table to look at the evidence and to set the agenda through this towards this reforms for women, to design the reform actually, and to even support in the implementation of some of these reforms. So again, I think that what for me it's critical is that the stakeholder coalition and coordination needs to happen so that we can sustain implementation. Thank you.
Thank you so much for highlighting those actionable steps in details, and I appreciate the emphasis on collaboration and coalition formation, because Achieving meaningful change and growth requires coordinated efforts across multiple sectors. Everyone at every level needs to be accountable, and we need to see policies, reforms, and businesses from gender lens. Thank you so much for your perspective. And now to Ms. Essay. PIC has conducted diagnostic studies using design thinking and behavioral approaches. Can you share examples briefly, please, where these approaches have led to measurable improvements for women and girls?
Okay, thank you, Ms. Ogenekewe. So when you talk about diagnostic studies, you know, just like the word says, you are trying to, you know, identify what the issue is and then try to provide a solution to the issues that have been identified already. So talking about still dwelling on women economic empowerment, there was a time we investigated why you know, women were not having access to finance. So, but we looked at it from the digital aspect. So we're trying to investigate what was hindering them, you know, the sort of bottlenecks, the experience, you know, in accessing finance, but in the digital context. And I think both my colleague and I stressed a lot around inclusion, you know, trying to identify what the problem is from the people themselves, you know, before going ahead to design policies. So it brings us back here again. And some of the issues that were identified, the bottlenecks that women said they were experiencing, was basically around having, you know, issues around hidden charges. You know, sometimes you make transfers and you are not sure what happens to your money. You keep seeing that the money is reducing. So there were issues around hidden charges. And then there was lack of trust in systems, right? So there's one thing to have systems in place, and then there's another thing for people to even trust that system, to want to, you know, plug into that system. So most of them did trust the system, and also complex filing process. That was another issue. And then a whole lot of issues around access. Now coming to, you know, utilizing those findings for measurable outcomes. So we believe that, yeah, we've not gotten to the next step yet, but these are potentials. These are solutions that can actually lead to measurable outcomes. So one of the solutions identified is making it easy for women to have access to NIN, right? National Identification Number. So discovered that a lot of women still don't have access to that. Some of them don't even have digital phones, you know, the Android phones that could make access easy to some of the opportunities, financial opportunities. And one of the ways that could happen is, you know, getting linked up with that NIN. Most of them don't have NIN. So that ownership is not there, and all of that. So ultimately, so we think that based on this diagnostic study that has been carried out, so we think that when women are empowered, starting from that registration of NIN, which most likely will give them opportunities, give them access to a lot of financial opportunities, financial products, so we can start from there. And when they register for, you know, get that NIN, it gives them that, you know, imputing them on the national database, so it becomes easy to, you know, trace them and you know, capture them in the formal system. So they are kind of giving that platform, you know, to have access to a lot of financial opportunities. So we think that this will increase their ability, to increase their agency, to begin to do some of the things that they found difficult before. So, and then it will also build their financial confidence, you know, and this can become a potential to increase their access, you know, to financial opportunities as well. So, yeah, so I think I will stop there.
Before I wrap this up, I'd like to get both of your brief closing reflections. And first of all, I'd like to ask Ms. Ogechi, what key message would you like policymakers, institutions, and businesses to take away this International Women's Day? Just brief closing on that.
Okay, so thank you very much, Kerry. So advancing rights, justice and action for women and girls is very central to Nigeria's economic transformation. Now, the question is no longer why women's inclusion matters. You know, the evidence is clear. The real question is how quickly and how intentionally we must act, especially with the rapid growth of technology and artificial intelligence, which can act to either amplify all the issues that we've identified or can be leveraged as a mitigation strategy. So whatever we decide to do, we must act fast. Inclusive growth will not happen automatically. It must be intentionally designed. And so at the NESG, the intention is that that intentional design will be done through evidence, dialogue, and implementation tracking. And that is our commitment. So through the policy commissions at the NESG, we'll continue to drive reforms that expand women's economic opportunities and institutional accountability. So the NESG continues to invite the government, the business, the communities, the academia, the civil society, and every stakeholder to treat gender inclusion as a very competitive priority and to commit to actions that are measurable and impactful. Thank you.
Yeah. So for final thoughts, my colleague, you know, talked a lot around collaboration, coordinated collaboration. So there are a lot of work going on. People are doing things in different sectors. So that coordinated collaboration is really, really very important if we really want to close that gender gap. Let's come together, you know, collaborated efforts and, you know, have a united front. So it's going to go a long way in closing that gender gap. So which will lead me to the launch of the Purple Book. I know someone will be saying, oh, what's the Purple Book? Purple Book, what's Purple Book? So it's a compilation of insights generated during our Gender and Inclusion Summit, a summit that is hosted by the Policy Innovation Center every year. And it's a platform, you know, dedicated to advancing gender-responsive governance across Africa. So it brings together diverse stakeholders to exchange ideas, share knowledge on gender transformative policies and practices, and then also foster collaboration. And we've, you know, talked a lot around collaboration. So we've had it for 4 consecutive years, and each year we compile all those conversations, identify the challenges, of course, to now come up with actionable recommendations. And so that's what we'll be doing this year. We'll be launching the Purple Book, you know, based on the insightful conversations that, you know, we had last year. And so the summit is not just about talking. You know, I talked a lot around the WE policy. It came to reality based on some of the conversations that we had, you know, during that Gender Inclusion Summit. So I'm taking this opportunity to invite everyone. So you don't want to miss the launch of the Purple Book and From Voices to Action. Yeah, so it's not just about talk. It's also all about action. So this year, as we launch the Purple Book, we'll also be having a dialogue session on that is centered around, you know, the tax reforms that is ongoing. So who pays? Centering women, youth, and informal workers in Nigeria's 2026 tax reform. So as we also celebrate the International Women's Day, we're also using this as opportunity to drive the conversation around equality. How do we make it better? So we'll be expecting you, it will be happening 17th of March, time 11 a.m. Our flyers are there, register virtually to join. Thank you.
Thank you both for such an insightful conversation. Today's discussion highlights the importance of strong policies, behavioral insights, and collective action in advancing the rights and opportunities of women and girls. As we commemorate International Women's Day 2026, the message is clear. Progress requires not just commitment, but sustained action and accountability. On behalf of the NESG and the Policy Innovation Center, thank you to everyone who joined us for this conversation. And to all women and girls around the world, today we celebrate your leadership, resilience, and contributions toward building a more inclusive future. Thank you for listening. Happy International Women's Day.